My daughter's pregnant. I don't know what to do.
My wife and I have dreamed of having children for years.
I had a baby when I was 17 and placed her for adoption.
I must have felt your tears when they took me from your arms. I'm sure I must have heard you say goodbye. Young and so afraid, had you made a big mistake? Could an ocean even hold the tears you cried? But you had dreams.
Welcome to Adoption Perspectives with Rebecca Volley. This program is sponsored by Parker Adventist Hospital's Family to Family Adoption Support Program. Rebecca is the adoption liaison for Parker Adventist, and she is an adoptive mom herself. Join us as we look at adoption through the eyes of those involved.
Hi, this is Rebecca Volley, and welcome to Adoption Perspectives. I am so glad that you are joining us today because we're going to be talking about some just great stuff. So I've got great guests in studio as well as on the phone, and we're really going to discuss just the wide spectrum of adoption and how things have changed and the impact of the past. And I think you'll find it really insightful. I know that you're going to learn from my guests just as much as I've learned from them over the last months and even years. So like I mentioned, my name is Rebecca Volley. I'm the adoption liaison in the Parker Adventist Hospital birthplace. And I also want to thank Parker for, gosh, believing in something and being willing to step beside me and behind me to allow me to work with families that are going through adoption prior to the hospital time, but then also during the hospital time. And many of you know that I kind of came into this as an adoptive mom with my three kids that are now 11, 13, and 15. And I just thought I'd just kind of be a wedding coordinator for adoptions and be in the hospital after going through two very different experiences, and just was amazed at the need for training in the birthplace and training in the hospitals around how to give just neutral, compassionate care to people that are involved. And, you know, this idea of being there in the hospital to come alongside the patient, it just has really expanded. So now we're working with families that are considering adoption. They just sometimes have just found out they're pregnant and they're like, oh my gosh, you know, and it's on their radar and they want information, but they also need all the information as to what they're going to do in their situation. Then we're able to work with families that at times are going through infertility. We have a Maybe We'll Adopt class where we can sit and talk about kind of what they can expect from the adoption process and talk about, you know, so much of the verbiage that people use and what it means and what it doesn't mean. And making sure they're getting accurate information. And then once they decide, if people are heading towards an adoption, we can help them with classes and making sure that they have access to the same classes expectant parents would be able to take. And also for women that are considering adoption, being able to take a childbirth class and know physically what to expect from the childbirth experience so she's empowered during that time. Then obviously I'm there in the hospital and supporting the families and doing what I can. I will say I don't by any means make it easy, but I try to make it a little easier as far as the emotional impact. And then the after support that is just so needed across the board. And the post-adoption support, whether it's from a woman that's placed her child or for the adoptive family, there's such a need for us to really understand the impact of this child's placement. And gosh, I think that gets lost as well. So it's been awesome just having the opportunity to create the program at Parker over the last 8 years, and now really raising the bar to other hospitals across the nation to really have them address this in the birthplace and help their nurses and their doctors kind of empty out their suitcase of what they think adoption is and really fill it with neutral, accurate information. Because, man, it's complex, and they don't know, and why would they know? So we got to make sure that we help out with that. So many of you have heard we have a couple trainings coming up, one in August, one in October, and really hoping our two-day seminar that we've written will empower healthcare workers to be able to give that neutral, compassionate care in the birthplace. So today, one of the things that I'm just so excited about this radio show, because this one's really been really in the works for years. Many of you know when I was asked to do the Adoption Perspectives radio show, I felt it was really important that I not manipulate the information that was going on the airwaves, that I not only kind of tell, oh, the rainbows and unicorns and everything's beautiful and there's no shrapnel in adoption. And it's just really important to me that the stance that we've had at Parker Adventist to be pro-education is really to be giving voice to all people that have been involved in adoption, even when the story is hard. And I remember early on having a conversation with one of my guests, Lori Holden, who is the author of The Open-Hearted Way to Open Adoption. And I remember that was, gosh, we were even talking about Lori's book at that point. And I told her, I said, gosh, I really want to be able to have people that come that can come on and give an added perspective, whether it's positive or negative, or just to add richness to my understanding of adoption. And she said, well, you need to meet Claudia. I was like, Claudia, who's Claudia? And she's like, she is this amazing woman who really shares from her heart, but she also listens, and you really should get in touch with her. So here I am 2 years later with both of them, Lori in studio, Claudia on the phone, for us to have a rich conversation about adoption from all those that have experienced it. Myself as an adoptive mom, Lori as an adoptive mom, and then Claudia having walked the path of being a birth mom. So Claudia, welcome to the show, and Lori, welcome to the show.
Thank you. Hello.
Hello. So, Lori, I'm going to hand it over to you because tell me, Claudia, we're going to talk about you just for a moment. So
it's okay.
No pressure. Okay. So, Lori, tell me about why Claudia? Why did you? Because there was no pause that you said this is who I should be talking with.
Claudia does something really, really effective. Well, she does two things. One is she tells her story, and people love to learn from stories. Because typically, you see the world through the lens that your experiences have created for you. So when I, as an adoptive mom, a new and happy adoptive mom, and in an open adoption, and my daughter's first mom was, doing well with everything, I thought that this is probably what all adoptions were. I didn't have any experiences to tell me otherwise. I made a misstep on an online forum at one point, and I got spanked by some people, and rightly so, based on their lenses and their experiences, but that hurt. And I licked my wounds for a while, came back and just started lurking and listening and not participating because I was unsure of myself. And one of the people I began listening to was Claudia, because she told her story, and I could see, I was able to absorb a different experience than I had and see from a birth mother's perspective, especially from the time of the baby scoop era. And so the other thing that Claudia does is she listens and she engages. So she's not just talking with the people who already agree with her. She's willing to reach out and educate people who don't have the right lens, don't have complete lenses on. And so when I finally met her at a blogging conference several years ago, I was starstruck. I think I tripped over my tongue.
Ah. Nice. Well, Claudia, welcome to the show.
Thank you.
Well, now, Claudia, you and I did officially connect over a change in policy that we made at Parker Hospital. And again, luckily, someone had called me out on the fact that I talked about having childbirth classes for birth moms. And in the conversation with someone, they said, she's not a birth mom. And I was like, excuse me? They're like, she's not a birth mom. I was like, oh, well, but I mean, she's going to do adoption. He's like, yeah, but she hasn't done it yet. And she's not a birth mom. You're offering a childbirth class, but it's to a mom. It's to a patient that may at some point be a birth mom, but isn't yet. And I really started thinking, huh, I was so glad, one, that he called me out on that. And two, that I could rethink how does that impact the way I care for my patients if in my mind they're already birth moms? And that's not right. And so we did go back through the policies and procedures at Parker Hospital, and God bless my staff, because I was like, change of verbiage. And they're like, Rebecca, seriously? I'm like, I know. Stay with me. You'll understand why. So after some teaching, we were able to go in and change so that it says just, this is a patient. This is how we care for our patients that are pursuing an adoption plan. And they don't have that title. We won't be putting that title. And it continues to change how we care for our patients in the hospital because of that neutral piece. So you had heard or seen that I had talked about that on a different blog.
Yes. Well, what happened was I had found the first blog that talked about the story about one adoptive mother hearing it from another adoptive mother and rethinking it, and therefore she was sharing it. And then I guess that was what got into your view. And she was very excited because then we connected and we were chatting. And I remember it was just very funny because it was, you know, in the morning and I get this Facebook message, guess what? And I was like, oh, my God, I don't know what. And it was about how you had posted that you guys were changing the language. And I, of course, was extremely excited because, you know, just any, this is such a long, it's such a long, difficult, I don't want to say battle because then it makes it sound like there's a war, but it's just been such a long process of educating people, and sometimes it is literally one human being at a time, and so when there is something that is truly, you know, a miraculous, as far as I'm concerned, you know, just it goes a step in the right direction. It's something that, you know, people in the adoption community have been talking about this stuff for years. We need to rejoice in it because then we need to know that all the talking that we're doing, there is, you know, finally some positive gains from it, and it's not just, you know, batting our heads up against the walls, which I think sometimes it does feel like.
Absolutely. Well, and I think being in such a unique position in the hospital, because I'm not an adoption agency, I'm not an adoption attorney, I'm not, you know, I don't have a piece of the puzzle at this point, because there aren't hospitals that are doing what we're doing. And so it's given me a really unique perspective, because I hear different stories, and I love you, and I've talked, Claudia, about the concept that so often we're all in our own soundproof rooms preaching to our own choirs.
Mm-hmm.
And we're not clipping articles that don't agree with us. I mean, let's be honest, right?
No, well, we're not even talking to people that don't agree with us. And it's just kind of ridiculous when you look at it because, you know, and that's one of the things. I mean, that's how I ended up, you know, talking to Lori in the first place. I mean, when I first came online, and for the most part, I was no different than anybody else. I mean, that's the thing. So it's really hard for me to come to someone who, you know, might be 2 years into the process or, you know, thinking about adoption, who basically, you know, they've gotten their information the same way that I did. Mm-hmm. You know, they get it from the media, they get it from, you know, really bad reality TV shows, they get it from sensational stories, or I used to like to say, you know, it's after-school movies, you know.
Right, right.
You know, I mean, like, that's where I got the ideas from, and I didn't know any better. And the problem with a lot of things with adoption is that until you really go through it, from whichever perspective you're from, you know, whether you're an adoptee, you're an adoptive parent, or you're a birth parent, until you really have lived it for a while and have checked out everything, and you don't really know. And so, you know, I can't blame other people for not knowing the same things that I didn't know back in the day.
Right, right.
And, you know, so that's the, it really becomes difficult, because by the time you learn something that is actually informative, it's usually you've already made decisions and choices that have affected your life and affected other people's lives. And with adoption, you usually can't go back and undo them.
Yeah. Well, and I think that we've talked a lot, too, about the idea that there's so much, there's so many stereotypes and there's so many categories, like, you know, that all birth moms are this, all birth dads are this, all adoptive parents are this, and all agencies are this. And there's so many blanket statements. And I think that the hard thing is once we kind of decide what that blanket statement is, we just kind of take in what agrees with that. I was at the National Council for Adoption conference last week, mm-hmm. and one of the quotes that was used so much was, and I love it, I'm going to read it. It says, "We do not describe the world we see, but we see the world we describe." And just that concept of we take in what agrees with us, we build our, and it's funny that you said kind of the battle, because I think the tendency is that it feels combative. It does feel like it's, you know, kind of that people on opposite ends of the battlefield, which is so maddening, because then there's no conversation and there's no progress.
No, and that's even, you know, when I first started, as I said, you know, I first got online in 2001, and I, as I said, I was no different. And the first thing I had, just like Lori, was, oh, I got my, you know, I got seriously slapped and had my opinions handed back to me on a silver platter. And maybe it is, you know, a certain type of person, but I did the same thing. I lurked. I listened. I stopped talking. And I just heard what other people had to say. And it really was other birth mothers who had a completely different experience than I had, because a lot of them were older. A lot of them had been through the whole baby scoop era. They had been to maternity homes. They did not choose adoption. They surrendered to the forces that were against them. And they were angry. And, you know, I'm coming on going, oh, Yes, well, I relinquished the baby. And you know, it was the hardest thing I ever had to do, but it was the best decision I ever made. And they were like, okay, so what? So you relinquished your kids so you could go to school? Like, you couldn't have gone to school without relinquishing your baby? Oh, so you went to parties.
Hard.
Are you going to tell your son that you got to, like, you know, have fun and go to parties and concerts? And it was just like, oh, I had never thought of it that way. I had never been taught to think of it that way. I had been taught to think of adoption as a certain thing, and that's what I wore. And that's how I thought of myself. And, you know, it's the ability to see something different. So I lurked and I quieted and I listened to other people until I understood them. And then it was funny because then it was the same people. And actually, we can probably name the name because it's long gone. It was this MSN board that was called Adoption Insights, which was just a very, very angry place, mm-hmm. rightfully so. But it was an incredible wealth of information. I'm still very angry that it got taken down. Mm. But they did that system-wide. And it used to kind of, I would guess maybe because I identified with people, but they would come on and they would find this board and they would just be shocked that, you know, people could feel negatively about adoption mm-hmm. in any which way or form, because in general, what we're told is, you know, it's a wonderful solution to an unplanned pregnancy, you know, homes are found for unwanted babies, and, you know, the adoptive parents are so wonderful, and they, you know, have been waiting for a child for so long, and then, you know, the person who has the unplanned pregnancy can go on and live their life as if they didn't have a baby. And that's the way the majority of the world sees it, because that's the way we've all been taught to see it. So I'd see these other people come on and be like, oh, wait a minute, I'm so confused, wait. And this was a place predominantly of, as I said, other birth parents, mostly birth mothers, you know, some adoptees involved in there too. And when people would come in, they would yell at them, be very angry at them. And it was war. I mean, it really was. It was just like, you know, if you were an adoptive parent and you dared to come on there, you were going to get yelled at,
cursed
at, beaten up. I mean, it was horrible.
I wish you could see Lori nodding right now.
She's like,
yeah. Well, and I think that's the hard part is that you never hear. And then once you share and it doesn't match what people are telling you should think, you withdraw. And then when we withdraw, then it's even worse because we can't make sense.
Exactly, and it's just, and it would be so easy to dismiss everybody because there's so much anger involved in it. I mean, and as I said, the anger is rightful, but I used to look at it and say, well, okay, well, these are not, these parents who are coming in are not, you know, like even you, Lori, like, you didn't take my baby away from me. So what point do I, why do I need to call you a baby snatcher? You know, I'm not going to call you a kidnapper. And it just didn't seem to me that it made any sense because then people sit there and go, oh, my God, you're just crazy.
Yeah.
Oh, those are some angry women. And it just makes it much easier to dismiss anything that makes sense or any possible, you know, understanding or any mutual respect. Like, they can't understand it because you're so angry, and so they leave.
I watch this with my kids. When you get attacked, your natural response, without thinking, is to attack back, to defend yourself and attack back. And so this is what I would see happening on these boards. And it did take that time of reflection, of pulling back, and a dedication to coming back and listening, like you, like what happened to you and I as well, to start seeing a bigger picture. And Claudia, I was going to ask if you, I heard you mention this before about your coming out of the fog, and I thought maybe you could talk a little bit more about what that process was like for you to come from the place of adoption was wonderful to the place where you are now through that MSN board.
It was a process. I mean, it's a long process, and I think that's one of the other things that other people who are not foggy anymore need to definitely remember, of how long of a process it is, and it's painful. I mean, I would say it probably took me about a whole 2 years to really kind of let everything settle down and figure out how this new information related to my own experience, my own story, and where the different pieces fit in, and, you know, what could be applied and what made sense to, you know, to what I had lived through. So it was really, it was definitely painful. I mean, my first reaction, I think, is the normal, as I've seen it again and again, so I believe it is normal, is you are angry, you hate those people who dared to make you even suggest something. And I think especially because it is adoption, we're not talking about like, oh, my favorite color is red, well, your favorite color is blue, well, what's wrong with you, everybody should like red. You know, this is something that most people who are affected by adoption, it affects our whole life, whether you're an adoptive parent, And, you know, this is how you have your family. And this is, you know, you love your children, of course. So now that someone's telling you, well, you know, the way that you love your children or the way that, you know, you formed your family isn't good, whether it's an adoptee who also have their own issues with, you know, looking at the different aspects of adoption and accepting some of the more, you know, not so rosy pictures of it, because you're basically saying, you know, you could be seen as criticizing their parents. You could be seen as criticizing the way they came into this world. And then for birth parents, especially, I think definitely the younger ones who, you know, at this point, we, and I'm doing my air quotes right now, you know, we choose it.
And I think I've heard it said that the fog is very protective, and you must need that right after you have a childectomy. You need that to survive.
I think so. And I used to think it was kind of like my personal job to make other moms who were still kind of foggy to, you know, see the light. And then I said, who am I to, you know, pull them out of that place until they're ready? They have to be ready to do it.
Isn't grief like that? I mean, I think about after losing my mom, going through that first year, you feel like you're just walking numb, because if you really felt it all at once, you wouldn't survive it. And so I see that with the women that I have watched at the hospital, that there is that kind of, I've got to just kind of keep saying the mantra. It's almost that mantra of, you know, with my mom, well, she's in a better place. She's in a better place. She's in a better place, you know, and it's almost that. Yeah. And I think what you do too, Claudia, is you give permission. And I hope that we're doing that with the shows that we do here at Parker or at Adoption Perspectives, to give permission and give words for the loss that surrounds adoption. And I often say adoption has shrapnel, and there's pain and there's difficulty. And I think I'm paralleling this as you were talking to giving my kids permission to miss their parents and what they go through when they're talking about their birth parents, and how I can come alongside them. And by me talking about that, it gives them permission to put words with their emotions and their feelings that they have. And by you saying it's okay if it doesn't feel all rosy, then you're giving permission for women to give a voice to their loss. And I think that's huge, because in the day and age of umbrella or the rainbows and the unicorns and win-win situations and all that, we have to acknowledge the loss for everyone to be as whole as possible. And I love that about Lori's book, because the subtitle is Helping Your Child to Grow Up Whole, that if you don't give permission for those conversations to happen, whether at the level for the birth parents or for us as adoptive parents and the losses we've gone through, for our kids to go through those losses, then it's like this bizarre puppet show where we're all just kind of pretending. And that's not going well. Like, that didn't go well. I'm just just saying that didn't end well. And I do want to double back before, we're going to be heading into our break pretty soon. Okay, decisions, so much to talk about. We're going to go ahead and take our break a little early, but I want to jump back in when we come back into the baby scoop era. I want to talk about that and the implications for adoption today. I have learned a ton, because we want to include that in our curriculum at Parker, because it's so impacting to adoption today and beyond. And I'm amazed at how many people go, I'm sorry, the what? Oh, so we have to talk about that. So we're going to take a quick break. Stay with us for the second half of Adoption Perspectives.
You're listening to KLTT's Weekend Edition, infusing your day with the light of God's Word. KLTT is broadcasting in high definition on AM 670 Commerce City, Denver, and worldwide at 670KLTT.com.
Hi, this is Rebecca Volley, the host of Adoption Perspectives. I hope that you'll join me August 14th and 15th, or October 24th and 25th, for the Centura Health Adoption Conference. This conference will teach healthcare professionals how to care for the adoption community. That's August 14th and 15th, or October 24th and 25th. For more information, visit parkerhospital.org/adoption support. I hope to see you there.
Christian radio at its best. KLT Denver.
Hi, welcome back to Adoption Perspectives. This is Rebecca Vall, your host, and I'm the adoption liaison at Parker Adventist Hospital. And I am having so much fun. I hope you're enjoying this show and that you're learning from this show. I am sitting here with Lori Holden, the author of The Open-Hearted Way to Open Adoption, Helping Your Child Grow Up Whole, as well as Claudia Darcy, who is on the phone with us from the East Coast. And we are just talking about adoption and talking from all perspectives, the need to continue dialogue to better this process. We know adoption is going to happen, so how can we make sure that it's ethical and it's really serving those that it impacts? So one of the things that came up, I started again learning more and reading stuff on the internet and came across the concept of the baby scoop era. And I was pretty mortified that I knew very little about it. And the more I learned, I was even more mortified that I knew very little about it. So I would love it, Claudia, if you actually directed me to some sites and some experts and whatnot. Can you talk just a little bit about what that was about and how that's impacted even practices today?
Well, what it comes down to is adoption as we have it today, the foundation of it is based on the baby scoop era. And basically, the lines of exactly when it begins and ends are kind of, blurred.
Sure.
But you're looking at the period probably post-World War II until some people put it, the passing or the upholding of Roe versus Wade. And during that time frame, there's estimated at, I think it's over a million mothers, and I might be wrong about that one, in the country were forced, basically, to relinquish their children to adoption. If it was 1950, 1967, 1964, and mm-hmm. you were pregnant and you were not married, there was a very good chance that your family, your parents, they would send you to a maternity home where you were basically imprisoned and under a large grouping of different social stigmas and
sure.
pressure, religious and societal-wise. You were separated from your baby's father. You were separated from any mourning support. And you had to relinquish. And that was it. Any adoption conference that I go to, it's always like from 1964 until 1969, there are so many birth parents and adoptees from that time frame just because of the baby scoop era.
Well, and I think you led me to the book, The Girls That Went Away, I believe, mm-hmm. which is, I'm halfway through it, so powerful. And the idea of, we talk about, giving up, placing for adoption, and that this era was really that idea of surrender because there was so much pressure and there was no dialogue that went on with these women about what would happen. The plans were made, the arrangements were made, the money was spent, and that was what they were to do. And I thought was interesting, like there was an unspoken rule even in society that when they came back from being at Aunt Marge's for, a year, there was never even any conversation.
No, and what you have, the after effects of that is that you have a whole, more than one generation, you have like almost three generations of women that went through probably the most significant trauma of their lives and then were told never to talk about it
again.
Yeah,
in silence.
And they never could talk about it again. And so, you have people that have built the rest of their lives hiding the secret forever. And unfortunately, what we also have is, even though adoption is different, there's still a lot of those same things that are there. I mean, they're still, no matter what, like I relinquished in 1987, and I know women who have relinquished even, in the past 6 months. There is still a stigma of shame that's mm-hmm. under there. I mean, one of the first things my own mother said was, what are the neighbors going to say?
Right. I still have patients that the parents put them in the car and then open the garage door. So absolutely, mm-hmm. there is that idea of what will the neighbors think and how are they going to make sense of what's going on? It's amazing. And I think some of the pieces, and one of the things we've done at Parker is that every placement that's done, the account is put on hold as far as money exchanging hands and who's paying the hospital bills and all that. That account is put on hold because we never, ever want a family to come in and pay the bills for the patient considering adoption and then be like, oh, well, they paid my bills. That was thousands yeah. of dollars. I guess I have to do this. And it's like, no. That can go on hold. If you choose to parent, we're going to work with you. We're going to make sure that we work with the billing and the Medicare and anything that we might need to help support you. But we're not going to have that be a leverage point. And hospitals have to ask themselves, are they doing right by their patient if they are making bills be paid, you know, I had recently heard one hospital told an adoptive family, you know, 75% down is typical. And I'm like, what? You know, it was all I could do not to say, stop, think about what we're doing. What are the ethical implications of this? How could this be leveraged, whether intentionally or in her mind, if that's her perspective or her perception that she can't pay for that and thus she must make this decision, that's wrong. We have,
and unfortunately, that's a lot of, you know, there's a lot of women that look to adoption because they fear medical bills. I mean, we know the numbers of uninsured people in this country, and that is, you know, I always say it's a lack of resources. Yeah. You know, women consider adoption most often because of a lack of resources, whether it's support, whether it's monetary, whether, you know, it's societal pressure, whether they doubt their own abilities to be a good mother. But when it comes down to it, it is a lack of resources. And so any of these things have implications. And even though it's better than what happened during the baby scoop era, and, you know, I always say we wrap it up in a pretty package, we still have a whole country that believes it should be based off of what used to happen and have no idea how it's happening now.
Right. I said last week when I presented at that conference, I was like, just because it's better does not mean we're done. Like, we have to still change, and we may be making steps in the right direction, but it's by conversations and sharing our perspective that's going to help us continue to move in the right direction with the ultimate goal of the child and serving that child.
Well, that's it, because when it comes down to it, we have a whole, you know, bunch of people, and like we were saying during the break, I really do believe that people have the best intentions. You know, whether you're looking at to adopt, you know, because you're infertile, whatever the reasons are, you're looking to relinquish, whatever it is, you're trying to do what's best for a child. And we can only do what's best for a child if we actually know the whole entire picture and can make a true informed choice from either end of the, you know, from the arena. And so until you know that, and I've put, you know, the onus back on, you know, adoptive parents and birth parents, considering that they need to do their own research and they need to look at everything and they should look at both sides, because otherwise they're not going to be prepared in any which way or form.
Yeah. Oh, I didn't know. I mean, Lori, did you feel like
I did not?
Yeah. I mean, I feel like I came in, I had my training, but having gone through infertility, you are so wounded on top of, you know, obviously financially you're in debt because of these procedures that haven't worked. And you are just like, just tell me where the next step is. I think that's one of the pieces of meeting families going through infertility before they step in adoption, to kind of be able to lay the groundwork of, okay, if someone tells you this, that's not okay. You know, and if they tell you this, that's not okay. Like, this is what you can expect. Because both of us, I mean, how long ago was it for you, Lori?
12 years, over 12 years.
Yeah. And I was 16 years. So, I mean, that long in... So adoptive parents are coming into that and they don't know. So when people are like, oh, those adoptive parents, they're this and they're that, how dare they? I'm like, yeah, they just really don't know. And, you know, the birth parents don't know. The adoptees are in the middle of it going, what's happening here? So I think transparency and that pro-education and the ongoing conversations are just essential. Now, part of obviously the implications of the baby scoop era, we have all the secrecy, all the shame, all the forged documents, which, you know, maddening. And I love in your book, Lori, when you, one of my favorite quotes, and would you read that for me?
Sure. I'm not sure I can find it, but do you have it?
Well,
there?
I wrote it down.
Oh, yeah, you go ahead. Oh, yeah. Closed records are the gift that keeps on taking generation after generation. I have some friends who grew up with me, and they were adopted. And, you know, the questions you are always asked when you go to the doctor's office is, what's your medical history? Not just your own, but your parents and your grandparents.
Right.
And she said, I would go in there, and I would draw a blank every time. She said, I hated that part of being adopted. So my sister is married to a man who was adopted, and their children don't know their grandparents' genetic history, health background.
None of that. So, I mean, the implications, it's interesting. I have my random story. I always have my kids' random stories, but I was chatting with one of my kiddos today, and I actually shared the fact that I was coming on the radio today. I was really excited, and I was talking with someone that had done an adoption a long time ago, and it looked a little different. I was telling him about closed adoption and not having information, and this is my son who has a relationship with his birth mom, and he was looking at me, one, like, I can't believe you're telling me that's how it was done. Like, that made no sense to him. But he said, you know, when I go on Ancestry.com, Mom, it doesn't give me any information because I'm adopted. And I was like, I just kind of looked at him and I was like, okay, we've never talked about Ancestry.com. He clearly sees commercials. But he starts like, when I put this in, and he made this assumption, and I don't know how it works. Maybe it's because he's too young to pull up his history or whatever. But for him, he made the leap that it was because mom, it's just too complicated. I'm not going to have that information. Now, the part two to that is I had been texting his birth mom yesterday and I was like, oh my gosh, we'll just call her and you guys can totally do this together and pull her family tree. You know, I mean, he's going to be able to do some of that he's wanted to. But it was interesting how quickly he made the jump. Well, you know, mom, it's because I'm adopted. He's 11. Like, seriously. So tell me, I'd love this, Claudia, if you'd give us the insight to the side of this idea that it's not their right to have information about their history, their personal history.
Well, that's what it really comes down to. And there is, you know, currently, and this is one of those things, too, that a lot of people don't know before they get involved in it, or it's too late to do anything about it. But pretty much there's six states in the country that have equal treatment of adopted people in those states. And the other 44 states have varying degrees of inequality to adoptees. But basically, you know, you're looking at, this is the birth certificate. This is a legal document that everybody in the country has a right to and can just go, you know, I lose my birth certificate. I need another one. I send my $12 to the county clerk when I was born with a picture of my license. And I say, give me my birth certificate. And they send me a new one and I have it there within 10 days. Adoptees aren't allowed to have that. And it's, you know, it's a legal discrimination because it's basically, it fits the absolute perfect description of discrimination.
Right.
Basing treatment of a person on circumstances of their birth. So the adoptees had no control over this.
Right.
They
right.
had no control whether or not they were adopted, and yet they are not treated equally by the same laws in this country that treat all the non-adopted people.
And I make the point in my book that even if we as adoptive parents have a copy of our children's original birth certificates, that doesn't excuse us from working to change this injustice, because we are parents of a class of people whose civil rights are not being honored. And we all need to work on that.
And it's one of the last civil rights fights in this country. I mean, you know, everyone makes a big deal about all these other, you know, civil rights issues. But we have, you know, we're looking at almost 7 million people in this country that are denied access to their original birth certificates based on laws that were created during the baby scoop era. So everything has changed. You know, a lot of things have changed about adoption. A lot of things have changed about what we know about human history, about what genetics, about medical information, about, you know, genetic testing, about insurance. All these things have changed, but the legislation that is sitting there in the state capitals has not changed. And the sad part is the majority of legislators, the majority of the public, the majority of people even involved in adoption don't have any idea that this stuff needs to change. And
right.
It really should have changed 30 years ago, not now, but we're still fighting. That is an actual battle.
Yeah, no, absolutely. Well, and Laura, you also talk about myths in your book about why they say we can't.
Yeah, one of the main myths is that adoptee birth records are sealed to protect birth parent privacy. But the timing of the sealing doesn't happen until placement, not at placement, but at finalization. So it's not to protect birth parent privacy.
Absolutely not. It's one of those things, and you know, it's funny because, you know, so many adoptees, when they actually do search and they do find out, they'll find out that, like, you know, their adoptive parents dug out their adoptive records and they actually did have a last name on, like, you know, the court filings or something like that. So there's plenty of times that confidentiality totally did not exist, and it's hysterical that they talk about how to protect us now when actually, statistically, it's less than 1% of mothers who don't want to have contact from their children ever. And we're looking at, you know, the last 70 years of adoption is a single 1%.
Wow. Will you say that again, Claudia?
1%. We are not changing laws based on almost fictional 1% of a small population that says no. And then even then, you're saying that one party has the right to decide the civil rights of another party that didn't have any choice. So it's just wrong in so many different ways.
I think we often also conflate the two issues of access to birth records and reunion, which are not, they don't necessarily follow each other.
No, because when, you know, an access to a birth records means that you're treating an adopted person the same way as you're treating a non-adopted person, which is what we should have. What they do with that information is their own business.
Right.
You know, whether they have the name of someone that they gave birth to and whether or not they decide to contact that person or not contact that person, the government and any other class of population of people does not decide, oh, you're allowed to talk to each other. Oh, you people are not allowed to talk to each other.
Right.
And that's what it's doing on this. And it really has no business because it really comes down to just treating them equally. And that's, you know, always the bane cause of, you know, I do work with the Adoptee Rights Coalition, and we have an annual demonstration every year. And this year it's in Atlanta in Georgia, shameless plug. And, you know, it's really, it's very important for anybody involved in adoption to, as, you know, even you said, Lori, adoptive parents, please, because you're talking about the civil rights of your children. And it doesn't matter if you do have a birth certificate, they can't get it. And that's
right.
The thing. They can't get it.
Right. And we know that. I mean, I think going in that we're told, okay, then they'll have their birth certificate. Then upon finalization, that will be sealed. Your name will be put on it. And I love, Laura, you talk about in your book that your kids both have both of their birth certificates. And, you know, now I can talk to families up front to say, make sure you get a copy of that. Because a lot of times they don't know what's going to be important to their child. When they're there in the hospital and they're just going through the motions and they're, you know, their head spinning, and how much of the stuff we do to say, you have to think big picture because now is the time and it shouldn't be like that.
No, it shouldn't be that you have to, like, fight, you know, your emotions for the first 6 months and remember, like, you know, oh, in between, you know, feeding and diaper changes and, oh, gar, I better make sure that, you know, that we have a birth certificate on hand and we have enough copies because we're never going to be able to get it again.
One of the brilliant points when I was researching this, and this might have come from the Adoptee Rights Coalition website, is that we don't allow fathers to hide their paternity. So why would we give that right to mothers to hide the paternity, especially now that we're trying to come out of this shame and this punishment out of the baby scoop era. So that was another reason that I was like, oh yeah, we really don't let fathers hide from their children. There should be a claiming there.
And there's just so much danger in people not knowing who they're related to. I mean, people have a right to know. I mean, you have cases of, you know, people who find, you know, somehow or another, they manage to find people that they're genetically related to. And, you know, there's always these interesting stories where they worked in the same places or
right.
They knew the same people. And, you know, how crazy is that to think that, you know, there are adoptees that could be dating their siblings.
Right. Well, and we've talked about that. We did a show last year about donors and the donor registry and the fact that they're, like, saying you have to register if you've done egg donor or you've done sperm donor, you have to register because there will be a natural draw. And on that show, there were so many conversations about how these people randomly found each other. There's another book called Sacred Connection, which I love, that's all about birth parents finding their children and how that came about in just this bizarre divine manner. And there is that draw. And I think to lose that, I was sharing with these guys, with Claudia and Lori off air, that I heard on the radio today, which I thought, there's a lot of different reasons I love this story I heard today, but there was a gentleman who, his daughter found him, and they said, you know, this pastor who had been, Pastor Will Russell in Arizona, he'd been working in the same rescue mission that his daughter had been working in. She found him. She's 24 years old. They reunite, and it was twofold. One, I love the fact that it was being shared and you could see the joy. I mean, I know that Lori saw it on the Today Show, the joy between the two of them that they'd found one another. But then also, here's this pastor sharing the fact on, I was listening to a Christian radio station this morning sharing this, and I thought, I'm reading The Girls That Went Away, and I'm hearing on the Christian radio station about a pastor whose 24-year-old daughter that was, you know, placed for adoption, given up for adoption 24 years prior, has found him. And I'm like, oh my gosh, like, things are changing, and I think we have some steps in the right direction that we have to sell. Celebrate, because that was pretty powerful for me. I was like, man, I don't think that would have been making the old Christian radio station 10 years ago.
No, probably not.
Probably not. And who knows as far as the backlash from that. But I think we just have to really be honest and be looking at ourselves and asking ourselves, how can we support kids? And it's the conversations we're having that are going to end up supporting those kids. So what can we do when you were talking about the power of the adoptive family and standing up for the rights of adoptees and birth parents, et cetera, Claudia, what can we do? You talked about, you just mentioned, and give the shameless plug again about Atlanta.
Yeah, okay. So it's the Adoptee Rights Coalition's annual demonstration. It is this year down in Atlanta because we follow the National Convention of State Legislators, and those are the people, they are the legislators that make the laws in every state. Unfortunately, when it comes down to the OBC access, which is the access to original birth certificates, it becomes a state-by-state issue, and therefore it's basically drawing attention to, you know, what we're trying to do, the importance of getting this restored for adoptees, the history of it, you know, everything that's involved, because it is quite a conversation. And as I said, most people don't know about it.
Yeah.
So we will be down in Atlanta. The actual demonstration is August 12th, and it's always a wonderful time. And people can also go find out more how to register on the AdoptiveRightsCoalition.com.
Are you also trying to pay for a booth? Are you taking donations for people who want to help?
We're also under our major fundraising drive right now, which is to help buy the booth. What it is the lobby hall itself is a giant exhibit hall, and those things are quite pricey to have our table there so we can access all the legislators as they come through and have our yearly conversations with them, make contacts and see which states are ready to maybe do a little rolling and which states are, you know, still lagging behind and need more pressure on them.
So, Claudia, how do we prepare if we do, you know, we're obviously advocating for adoptive families to stand beside you guys, and yet we know that some, I mean, that's scary. Like, I know that, Lori, I mean, you guys had shared kind of what it was like when you guys met, but do you feel like, looking from your perspective, we're heading into an era where we can stand side by side and advocate for these kids?
I think we have to. I mean, I think, you know, if we don't, anybody who's not, you know, we're just basically, if we're not learning how to work together, we're helping the system that kept us apart to begin with, and we're helping a system that's hurting the children. You know, I've made it my business, you know, as Lori and I, as our friendship can contest to, you know, I talked to adoptive parents as if they were real people, you know, 12 years ago, and I got a heck of a lot of flack for that, you know, why? They're never going to listen. Oh, they don't care. And, you know, it comes down, as I said, to best intentions. I really believe that nobody wanted to do, you know, I didn't believe that Lori was some evil, you know, thing with horns. I mean, so it just comes down to, like, the way that human beings interact is, you know, how can I expect someone to understand what I've been through and to understand my feelings as a mother if I can't, you know, demonstrate the same thing to them?
Right.
And I think we just have to come together. And plus, also, when it comes down to it, if we look at adoption as an industry, adoptive parents are the ones who are paying. Whether it's fees, whether it's birth parent expenses, however it is, whether it's home studies, to an extent, the adoptive parents do have the power. And I remember just realizing this years ago that, you know, it's easy for other parties to marginalize birth parents and adoptees. It's easy to throw out some stereotypes and to say things like, oh, I'm really sorry you had a bad experience. But not, it's not all like that. As we all come together and we all start sharing these stories, you know, you get a bigger picture, a better picture you know, it's not roses as often as we'd like to think it is.
Well, and I know talking to you, we talked about, and people that know me know I talk about the ones and the tens all the time, and people that are really pro something and really anti something are really loud. And I really want to give the platform to be able to talk to the ones, the twos, the threes, the fours, the fives, the sixes, the sevens, you know, because I think often when we say, oh, well, I'm a seven, bam, you're a 10. Well, I'm a four, bam, you're a one. And I'm like, whoa. And that goes for, if you can think of every kind of battle out there, we'll use that word, you know, whether it's, there's just so many different things, whether pro-life, pro-choice, Democratic, Republican, you know, spotted owl, no spotted owl, organic, you know, regular, whatever. Like, people are really, really passionate, but we lose the voice of all these other people. And I think the fear keeps us quiet, and isolation is the worst thing we can do. And so, I mean, even just the church, the non-faith-based community and the faith-based community, even that is like, whoa. And I think in the role that I'm in, I'd hear hear people talk and, oh, well, adoptive parents like that. I'm like, oh, not all of them. And then birth parents like that. Oh, not all of them. Well, you know, pro-life people like this. Not all of them, you know, and I find myself doing that more and more. But we have to have the voices across the spectrum to be willing to speak up.
Yeah, and it is important for those voices who are willing to speak up to learn to work together. And,
absolutely.
And really, and that's like across the board. I mean, I say that to, you know, the adoption groups. I say that I just posted the other day on my blog that, you know, there was a situation where some birth parents were putting down another birth parent or being outspoken and not, you know, saying their story enough. And it's like, okay, you know what, don't do that. Like, when you do that, you're doing the same thing that
right.
we've been done to each other forever, you know?
Right.
Like, don't perpetuate that. We all have a voice, and that goes with everybody, and everybody has a right to their feelings, but then there has to be some way that we work together. And I look at it like it's the big picture. What's the big picture here? What are we all trying to do? We're trying to go in the same direction. We're trying to make it better for the children that have not yet, you know, been born, the children that are already existing, the children that are now adults, you know.
Right.
Everybody has a parent, and everybody needs to, you know, when the adoptees, they have two sets. And
right.
you know, so we are all trying to make it better for them and to heal ourselves at the same time. And if we don't work together towards it, well, we're just going to be spending our time finding each other, and we're never going to get anything done. It's just
yeah.
silly.
Well, and I think it comes up, too, that we all have our filters. And I know when you first heard about what Parker Hospital was doing, I mean, luckily you heard about the policy change, because I think once you hear the policy change that we were doing, I think maybe you approached it different. But still, it can be taken very wrong as to what we're doing at the hospital.
Oh, definitely. And as I said, you know, when you had the, you put the post up on the Congressional Institute blog, and I said, well, good thing we talked before that. Because if I had read that without talking to you beforehand,
right.
I just would have been like, what?
Yeah.
Oh,
right.
No. And it's definitely, you know, and I realize, you know, it comes down to who we're speaking to, and I do the same thing when I speak to different parties, you know, how my language changes and how it all works. But, you know, it's also trusting people to a degree, you know,
right.
and it's really hard, I think, especially from some portions of adoption. I know a lot of birth parents have been severely traumatized and are
sure.
broken, and a lot of adoptees also have very similar trust issues, if not even over more. Sometimes.
Absolutely. Absolutely.
And it's really hard. I mean, in the adoption community, there's a real, often an issue with not trusting even people that share the same label. God forbid we, you know, go outside of our label group and believe other people. It's really, really difficult. And I just look at it like, you know what? I can't expect other people to do it unless I do it myself.
Yeah.
And, you know, I'm not always perfect.
Well, and you know what's funny is, you know, I had my devotional time like praying over, oh my gosh, what am I doing? I've had people that have said the same thing like to me too, Claudia, like, what are you doing? You know, and I'm like, no, this is important. And one of the scriptures that came up, and I know recently you wrote about the church too, Claudia, about kind of their perspective on adoption, but it was the scripture that was all about, you know, picking at the sawdust in your brother's eye when you've got a plank in yours. And, you know, Jesus's words like, you hypocrite. And it really convicted me to say, you know, what we can do is we can look at what our perspective is, what our filters are, and we can listen and we can focus and we can learn. But spending all our time looking at the sawdust in other people's eyes with a huge plank. And then it hit me this morning, like, think about the size difference there. I mean, we're talking, Jesus is like, that's sawdust. I'm talking a plank in your people, you people. And so it really made me realize all I can do is look at my own perspective and try to clarify and get a better perspective of what's happening in adoption to help serve those families better. And that's it. That's what I can control. And you've really helped me do that, Claudia. And I really appreciate your willingness to talk with me and give me the insight I've gained.
Well, I love the concept of what you guys are doing over there. I mean, the fact that, you know, just as we were talking about the other day, the fact that nurses in maternity wards in hospitals have no training in adoption.
That's so wrong.
I mean, it's crazy. And
yeah.
the fact that really does need to change, and it is a perfect environment to do so, to be able to give a mother considering adoption the accurate information so she can really make an informed choice one way or the other, but that's what it comes down to. And right now, we don't have that.
No.
I mean, I don't know of, I mean, I think I know of two, maybe three, okay, I'll say maybe four adoption type websites that are promoting adoption that don't use the word birth mother when they're talking about a mother who's considering.
Yeah, yeah.
I mean, out of thousands.
Well, and so it's interesting because that's the hard part, is because I know that you and I had talked about that with your own site and how that has allowed you to have people find you. And then, Lori, share what happened with you with an agency last week.
Yeah, I'm going to be speaking at a West Coast agency later in the fall, and they asked me to take a look at their website, and I pointed out that they're using the term birth mother. First of all, it should be two words, because we don't say adoptive mother as one word. We say them as two words. One is an adjective and one is a noun, and we should accord that same respect to somebody who has placed. But prior to placement, they are an expectant mother or just a mother. So I brought that up to them, and they said, yeah, we looked at it. We'd really like to try to change it, but our search engine optimization guy says that that people won't find us that way. And we'd rather have them find us because we can do all this education and this good treatment than have them find somebody who's perhaps less ethical.
Isn't that tough?
You know what? They're totally right, because I use birth mother totally all over my blog, and I have, like, you know, you talk about this, you know, the ones to the tens. You know, some people are like, oh my God, you're so anti-adoption. And then the people who are more anti-adoption consider me a total sellout. And, you know, God forbid I talk to adoptive parents and I use the word birth mother. Well, therefore, I must be working really for an agency. And those are some of the things that, you know, I know people think. And it comes down to the search engines.
Right. So how do we change? Yeah, we've really allowed the internet to kind of define this thing that everyone's saying we really shouldn't be doing it, but we're doing it. And then there's an assumption behind it. Like, since you're doing it, you are unethical. Or since you're doing it, you are now pro-adoption. You work for an agency. You have an agenda because you're using that term. And it's funny because all the people are doing it for the same reasons, because the way the internet works.
It's Google. I mean, and even though the language, I mean, I always sit there and I say, you know what? I understand why the word is used. I understand how it got down to
right.
it. You know what? And I am making a conscious choice. I mean, if you actually go into my older posts, I use it, and then I stop using it, and then I use it again. And I actually put, you know, here's the research. You don't have to take my word for it. You know, I'm trained in search engine and optimization. I was an SEO for many years. And so, you know, here it is. And I would say, I'm going to keep on doing it until Google, you know, recognizes the other words. But Google doesn't.
Yeah,
it's very sad, but it doesn't. And
well, but it's a perfect example of how it is that we can do something that on the outside can be misunderstood and perceived as a sign of an agenda that we don't have. So, well, we are out of time. I'm so sad. Claudia, promise me you'll come back.
I promise.
All right, Lori.
I will come back.
All right, just making sure. And I'll be back as long as, you know, Parker continues to enjoy what we're doing and support what we're doing. So, Claudia, last thoughts from you, and last thoughts from you, Lori, in the last minute or so. Claudia?
Last thoughts. I just think people need to keep on reaching out, that they can find allies in the most unlikely places, that we have to, you know, to quote you, Lori, have an open mind and an open heart, and really hope that, you know, the other people have good intentions, and to believe that. It's, you know, being an internal optimist and to look at the long term and to say, where are our goals? Okay, we have the same goals. So let's find instead the same similarities to work towards instead of the differences.
Oh,
I'm going to say the same thing that you did in different words. Anyone in a long-term relationship knows that sometimes you have to choose between being right and being happy. And sometimes in building bridges like we're advocating for today, you have to decide if you want to win an argument or affect change. And I would say, let's take the long view and affect change by listening.
I love it. Well, thank you both for coming on Adoption Perspectives today. And I do have on tape that you will both be joining me again. So you're trapped. Thank you all for listening in today. You can get in touch with me at parkerhospital.org/adoption support. Please get a hold of hospitals in your community and advocate for change in the birthplace. Train those nurses so that we can serve families. So thank you all so much for joining me for Adoption Perspectives today. Take care and God bless.
You gave life to me, a brand new world to see, like playing baseball with my son late at night.
You've been listening to Adoption Perspectives with Rebecca Volley, sponsored by Parker Adventist Hospital. You can learn more about the Family-to-Family Adoption Support Program by visiting their website, parkerhospital.org/adoption support. And remember, Parker Hospital does not function as an adoption agency and does not offer legal advice. However, Rebecca would love to hear your story. For example, are you considering adoption? Or perhaps you're facing an unintended pregnancy or know someone who is? Call Rebecca today at 303-269-4366 and share that story. Again, if you have any questions, topics for the show, or would like further information about adoption, feel free to contact Rebecca at 303-269-4366. Listen each Saturday at this same time for Adoption Perspectives, brought to you by Parker Adventist Hospital and heard right here on AM 670 KLTT.